This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
June 27th, 2020. This is Deanna Spingola, and I'm broadcasting from the sunny Chicago suburbs. Although we did have quite a storm just in the last 24 hours. Anyway, thanks for joining me today at republicbroadcasting.org. I invite you to visit and subscribe to Spingola.com, SpingolaSpeaks.net, ScreeningSandyHook.net. And during the program, feel free to email questions or comments to comment@Spingola.email. And I invite you to visit our chat room, which is Spingola.Chatango.com. And I also invite you to join me on Twitter. I don't participate in Facebook or any other social media, but I do tweet. Actually, I tweet quite a bit. So anyway, I hope that you will join me at Twitter. We will take calls later on in the program when we open the phone lines, and the phone number, of course, is 800-313-9443. Okay, our first guest is something that we have had on before, and I'm going to talk about something that's very, very interesting. His name is Ken W. Good, and his website is pbtx.com, and he graduated from Hardin Simmons University in 1982 with a Bachelor of Arts degree. He received a Master of Education degree in 1986 from Tarleton State University. He is a part of the Texas A&M system. In 1989, he received his law degree from Texas Tech School of Law, where he was a member of the Texas Tech Law Review. He's argued before the Supreme Court of Texas and the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, along with numerous courts of appeals, including the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth District, or the Fifth Circuit. Okay, do we have Ken on the program? Is he here?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, good, good, good. How are you today?
I'm doing really good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm glad that Ken W. Good is doing good.
Yes.
Okay, so we have this horrific situation going on, COVID-19, and we were going to talk today about all of the criminals that were released from prison. Was that a really great idea, or who came up with that one?
Well, it's kind of like the perfect storm. You've got courts. I heard a sheriff in California explain why it was started. You know, we were putting a hold on courts, and by releasing people, quickly and on, just releasing them without a bond or on a PR bond, that put off the requirement under state statutes of when you had to have arraignment. And so there was some logic to why they were doing it, but the problem is, it's just a crazy idea. I mean, I've been calling this, we've seen what the bail reform movement, what one reality is, kind of like on steroids. We've seen a quick, fast, a forward look into one possible future, and it's just been terrible. It's been horrendous. What happens when you just release people and without any accountability? And they see that as a green light to go and do more crime. I mean, I just posted on our blog this morning an example of someone who was released. He was arrested for DUI. He was already on probation for an attempted carjacking, and he was released within 3 days for testing positive for COVID-19. And within 24 hours, he's rearrested. But it was in that 24 hours, he went on a campaign. He had multiple assaults, multiple women he raped, a shootout at a gas station, a murder, multiple carjackings. And, you know, finally, within 24 hours, he got rearrested. I mean, that's an extreme example, but we're seeing examples across the country of people just being routinely rearrested over and over again.
That's ridiculous. It is. And I'm looking at your blog right now and seeing this person, Chris Butts. No, that's the assistant. What is this gentleman's name? Vincent.
Yeah, his name is Vincent, and then I can't pronounce the last name.
Ogiemian or something.
Yeah, Ogiemian or something like that.
Amazing. Amazing. I'll post this in our chat room. I don't understand why they had to release these people. Seriously, I do not get why they had to release them.
Well, and the problem that we're seeing is that this is just a complete assault on accountability. I mean, I'm releasing an article, or I've written an article that's being published in the next week that's really called, Surrendering to Vigilante Justice, the War on Accountability. And it's just terrible what's going on. The criticism is that we have poor people stuck in jail. But I think this has highlighted that the poor people, I mean, first-time offenders are not in jail. We've provided for them a long time ago. The people who are in jail now have almost earned their right there because they have committed multiple crimes and have a criminal history, or they're arrested after committing other crimes, or they're already on bond and they've committed new crimes. And so, these people are not in jail because they're poor. These people are in jail because they have a criminal history. And for some reason, we're now attacking that, and we're saying we shouldn't have any accountability. And that not only does that not make any sense, it's creating havoc across the country.
Well, isn't that kind of in line with defunding the police? Don't have any police, don't have any criminals, just let everybody do what they want, burn, loot, rape, whatever.
Absolutely. And what's really kind of crazy about that is, who's going to step into that void? I mean, is it going to be citizens? Or are we going to really fill that void with even social workers? I mean, if I'm a social worker, or if you're a drug addict and I'm a social worker, and I say, well, you really shouldn't be taking those drugs, well, I can't make you. I mean, you're an adult. You can tell me go fly a kite. The only reason why we have the ability to get them to quit taking drugs is by getting them in the courts and get them under court order, and so they go to drug rehab. Same thing with mental illness. People who have mental illness, they're a cycle of getting off their medications, getting in trouble, going to jail, getting under court supervision, getting back on their medications, getting released, and it's just a cycle that's terrible. But we don't have authority or ability to get them back on their medications without that oversight. And now we're saying, if we're going to defund the police, like some people are saying, who's going to step into that void? Is it going to be gangs? Or is it going to be drug dealers? I mean, we've got several examples that we've posted in the last week where, there was a city real close to where Mr. Floyd was killed, or a neighborhood that said, no matter what, we're not going to call the police. Well, suddenly homeless people came to the park and they were violating, existing laws, but they talked the police into not doing anything, and crime has increased and people no longer feel safe. And we're turning law and order on its head. You're criticized. And if so, a guy gets held up at gunpoint to steal his car, and he gets so upset, nervous, he gives them the wrong keys so they don't get his car. So they go down the street and get somebody else's car. But he calls the police, and then 2 days later, he is shamed into saying that he made a mistake in calling the police because he put those two young man in a jeopardy of possibly getting killed by the police. And we're just turning the concept of law and order on its head. We're giving criminals, we're not only giving them a free pass, we're raising them above everything. And who's going to take over in that situation? It's going to be the gangs. It's going to be the criminals. And we can't allow that to happen because as a country, we won't survive.
The other thing I noticed too and have read are that a lot of the politicians in these areas where they're asking for the defunding of the police have their own special little police force just to protect them, mm-hmm. and then to heck with the citizens.
Yes, but you know, in some of these areas where they're voting to defund the police, I mean, it's the very groups that are complaining that have been in charge of the police for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, and you know, they're talking about all these reforms that have caused this. Well, they were in charge, except for now they're jumping on the bandwagon of we need to defund the police. And I believe it's to deflect and so that they won't be criticized for not doing the very same thing that should have been done a long time ago. The best argument I've heard of what change would help the most is some help on dealing with unions. Because it's almost police unions, because it's almost impossible under the current system to get rid of a bad cop. And who's the group that's been giving those unions great contracts or concessions so that it makes it hard to get rid of bad cops? It's these same politicians that are now calling on defunding the police. I mean, they're just trying to ride the wave to survive. They're not looking after their citizens.
Right. And that's the same of the policemen's union. It's the same as the American Medical Association and their union. It's almost impossible when you have a union to get rid of somebody that is not doing their job or is just defective in doing their job. So, gosh, unions can be good, but then they protect the bad as well as the good.
When we get unions in bed with certain politicians where, I mean, it's not an illegal situation where they give them better contracts and so they raise their dues and so more contributions are going to the union and then the union is making contributions to the politicians.
Right.
It's just politics. It's bad politics. And that's what it is. And so we've got, this is an inner city problem and, you know, one party has been in charge of the inner cities and now their citizens are unhappy, and they're still blaming the other party that has no way or has not had any way to make any changes in that inner-city police force in decades.
Indeed, yes. And it isn't just inner-city. There are – I live out in the suburbs in Chicago, and there are a lot of rioting in what is considered – nice neighborhoods adjacent me.
What these groups, especially the politicians, are not thinking through is, they're just letting the rioters and protesters damage businesses. And as a result, you know, the businesses are now closing down and saying, we can't be here. Y'all won't defend our employees. You won't protect us. And, you know, our business is destroyed, and sometimes, a lot of times, insurance policies don't cover that. And so the politicians are allowing the protesters to have a free hand, and the very people they're hurting the most are the people that live there because their tax base is now going down substantially because the politicians wouldn't even stand up and protect their tax base.
Wow. And that is true. A lot of the business owners are boarding up their own property to keep the windows from being smashed in and everything else. It's who is the person that decides who to release these people? Are they just releasing nonviolent or violent offenders? Who are they releasing?
Well, you know, it depends on where you are, but in California, they did several things. They first downgraded a bunch of felony offenses to misdemeanor and then said, oh, we've had a reduction in crime because a lot of crimes that previously were being classified as felonies were now being classified as misdemeanors. On top of that, then they said, well, they entered, they had a, their judicial counsel enter an order that said they were just going to set zero bail for, a broad class of misdemeanor offenses. In Texas, like in Harris County and, well, no, in other places across the country, they start out by saying, well, it's, we're only letting nonviolent offenders loose. But the problem is that's not enough. I mean, they've quickly gone to just anybody. I mean, you're not going to be left in the jail. And then you've got stories where the people in jail are, you know, trying to gather around and give each other the virus because they think that's a free get out of jail, free card. And in some places it has been. And so I think we've had to, or I think it's been a cold shower to some jurisdictions when they've suddenly realized, you know, courts may go on a holiday, but the criminals do not. They see this as a time to, just redouble their efforts. I think we posted a story this morning about Williamson County, a place in Texas, where the sheriff is saying, you know, the increase in car thefts or burglaries of cars was the result of organized crime. And wow. It's just going to get worse. I'm afraid it's going to get worse before it gets better because as people have been laid off and stuck at home, and if we're now supposedly going to have a second wave, you know, we've had an increase across the country of cases, and nobody wants to talk about, well, it was just weeks after all these protests. And, you know, New York, they've forbidden anybody from even asking if they were at a protest, if they test positive, because they don't want anybody to know it was because they were at these protests. And so it's just a terrible situation. The politics are turned upside down. Day is night and night is day. And we've got to, we've just got to keep doing what we're doing because it's not sustainable. It cannot go on. It's just a recipe for disaster.
Well, even the COVID tests, are not conclusive. They're not accurate. Who's to say who has it and who hasn't? Who doesn't? Because there have been a lot of people who have perished for other reasons, car wreck or something like that, and they've just attributed that to COVID. Or if somebody dies in a nursing home or in a hospital because they've had a ventilator shoved down their throat and they've gagged and actually been killed because of the treatment, that increases the numbers. And I would think that if there were people in jail, that would probably be the best place for them to keep them from getting the disease, quote unquote.
I agree. I think we should not be making decisions on who should be out of jail based solely on who of an exposure to COVID-19. I think that can be something that can be taken into consideration. But like I said, if we've already dealt with first-time offenders, they're not there to begin with, but the jails are still full, then the only way to then get people out of the jail is to make it where you're not looking at first-time offenders anymore. I mean, we've got examples. You know, we have a terrible example of this lady in Texas who was killed in the parking lot of a Walgreens. She was an 80-year-old grandma, and the guy who killed her had been arrested over 70-something times. I mean, when's enough enough?
Right. And what about lawsuits against the people that let this gentleman out? I shouldn't say gentleman, this guy, this criminal, this career criminal. Yeah. Who's going to sue the people that let him out? Is there anybody that's going to sue them or take issue with this?
Well, I would hope so. I think right now what we're seeing is everybody's running for cover. You know, the DA initially came out with a story blaming the judge, and then the judge said, the case had been transferred to a mental health court, and then no one's to fault. Nobody's to
fault. Yeah, just pass the buck. Just keep passing the buck. Okay, we're going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
thoughts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony.
All right, we are back, and our first guest today is just a wonderful gentleman. We're talking about the criminals being let out of jail. His name is Ken W. Good, and the website of interest is pbtx.com. And be sure and click on blog so that you can look at the various items that are there of, well, everything that's going on. And there's just a lot of topics there. So do click on the blog. It is amazing what is going on. Let me share with you just a couple of comments from the chat room that I think are really pretty relevant. The Bolsheviks and the Soviet Union had let a bunch of criminals out of prison as well. Same people doing the same agenda over and over. And another comment, it's a very old leftist play, but it is played continuously through history and it seems to work every time, but you need a dumbed down populace, weak, uninformed, and doubtful of themselves and their heritage for it to work. Another comment. There is an old formula. If you want a politician or government to look bad, raise the price of drugs and pull back on law enforcement, and crime will go up. People will demand a change in leadership, and if you want a politician or government to look good, you lower the price of drugs, increase law enforcement, crime will go down, and people will celebrate their leaders. Therefore, this is probably all political to get the Democrats back into power. Your comments on any of that?
Well, let me start with the last one. I probably agree that there is a large element of, you know, it's a political season.
Sure.
Because you look at this and there's not any logic to them saying that this is all Republicans' fault with, you know, these are all taking place in cities, municipalities where a Republican hasn't been in charge in many, many years. I hope this is not controversial, but I question whether we really have a systemic problem with police. I think by and large, police are good people. And I know a lot of police officers are good, but just like any profession, there's a bad apple, especially in the police, I think, because you're dealing with a high stress situation and you're dealing with, physical activities where you have confrontations. And so I think it would be easy for people to make, when you have to make a sudden decision, there's a higher risk, or there's a high risk that you might make the wrong decision.
But sure.
I mean, what's the alternative? I mean,
right.
there's not an alternative to not having a police force. There's two examples the press keep looking at. And one of them, which they keep touting as a huge success, is from Camden, New Jersey. And if you actually read up and study it, which is I have done now, what they did when they say they defunded the police, they were only defunding and reformatting it so they could get rid of a bad union contract. And by getting rid of the bad contract, which allowed most of the police officers to stay on desk jobs and not even be out on the streets, they were able to double the number of officers that were out on the streets protecting the public. They arrested, by and large, everybody, including the police chief, that was working for the old police officers or group, and then when they reformatted it. And so when they say defund the police, that there is no example in our history that they can point to where that has been done the way they're talking about it. And so I think it's just politics, because with the way all the numbers are right now, everybody's going to be short on revenue next year. From top all the way down, cities and states have to operate under a balanced budget. So everybody's budgets are going to be under all kinds of problems. And so I think that this defund the police is really just feeding the mob, when the reality is they're going to be cutting budgets anyway. because they're going to be cutting everybody's budget. Texas, they're going to cut everybody's budget by 5%. They've already asked for it, and I think it's going to be more than that. So I think they're just feeding the mob, deflecting criticism away from themselves by saying we're going to defund the police by reducing their budget and putting it towards other racial causes, because they're going to be cutting everybody's budgets, and they can just play with the numbers and make it look like they're doing that, doing something. So they'll cut them less because they transferred that money. I think that's the biggest thing I think that's going on. I think it's also an example of where we're putting, no matter what, politics is trumping everything else, and even what's good for your citizens. I mean, we're now in a situation where it's controversial to say we're not going to let protesters damage property. I mean, it's now you need to let them have a free hand and to damage things, even though, and we're criticized if we're saying we're going to stop you from damaging property. That doesn't make sense. I mean, that's contrary to our history. It's contrary to the Constitution, which says you can peaceably assemble. But you've got news organizations saying there's nothing in the Constitution that prevents them from damaging property.
Oh my gosh, peaceably assemble, peace, no damaging property. Wow, we'll be right back in 3 minutes.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me.
All right, we are back. Our first guest today is Ken W. Good, and the website is pbtx.com. And do be sure and click on blog so that you can see the most recent articles that they have produced on the blog. I was thinking during the break, too, that you were talking about budgets before and how just about across the country people have to cut their budgets. And this also applies to a lot of other things within each county, the structures, the roads, the bridges. It seems that everything is sort of falling apart because of budget restrictions. And then when you think about where the money is going, a lot of the money that we used to use to repair our roads and our bridges and take care of infrastructure – is going to big pharma, a lot of, particularly since the Affordable Health Care Act. So big pharma is taking over a lot of the budgets because it's the counties and that have to pay for the Medicare and the Medicaid, within their counties.
Well, I think that's a good point. I think that we've had a lot of state expenses that have been passed down to the counties and down to the cities. And so, you know, that you've seen that especially in the area of mental health. And so we're now, you know, especially the criminal justice system, it's under a great, tremendous stress because, you know, in a lot of counties, the jails are the largest mental health care facilities in that area. And, you know, in Texas is it's not the bottom, but it's next to the bottom on the list of states, next to last on spending for mental health. It's because we're spending it all in our criminal justice system. And the reality is, and the sad thing is, because any other option is a lot more expensive than what they're doing now. But if you want to talk about jail overcrowding, if you just redirected the mental health people in Texas, you wouldn't have a jail overcrowding. I mean, there's several instances where you could say that if you just redirected this, you wouldn't have a jail overcrowding issue. But a lot of situations, that's the only place that we have left. And we have this vicious cycle of, you know, which we've already talked about, how they get off the drugs and you get them under a court order and they get back on, they get out and they get off their medications. And part of that problem is the cost. You know, who's going to pay for those drugs for them to take when they're released? And then who's going to make sure that they take them?
Well, too, and a lot of this started under George W. Bush, when he was governor in Texas. And it seemed that a lot of issues were medicalized and people were put on drugs simply because Big Pharma and some of the companies, Big Pharma companies, were donating so much money to the politicians in order to get things passed, for instance, like the Gardasil vaccine. Mm. It was passed in Texas initially, and I think it was Governor Perry made it a law that everybody over the age of nine, children over the age of nine, had to have this Gardasil shot. And it was because I think it was Merck that produced Gardasil. It's because they gave him a lot of money. So it's political. It's a dirty, rotten mess is what it is. But the average citizen is really paying for it.
I was told one time that, when you look at a lot of these issues, especially with criminal justice, it's so easy to say that that there is a hidden evil agenda going on. And someone, gave me some advice that I really took to heart one time. And they told me, don't assume an evil intent when just plain incompetence is enough on its own to explain what is going on. And so I think that while there could be some evil intent, I think that there's a lot of incompetence that would explain what's going on with more ease than saying it's an orchestrated move, especially on the inner cities when you've got local politicians, you want law enforcement to support them, and they're giving them money, they want money back, and so they're giving them a better contract, and they're just short-sighted. I don't think that's evil intent. And now we have the results of that, and we have people who want to get reelected when their electorate is so angry and mad, and so they're again just trying to redirect it away from them. And so they're doing what politicians do. And I think there's a lot of just political expediency and competence and maybe a lot less evil intent than we think.
But maybe this court mandated, chemical or medications. Maybe that is what has initiated this situation to begin with.
I don't know. That would be something really good to look at in more detail and to study maybe.
Yes, because a lot of behaviors, even with children, especially among male children, they're a little bit more rambunctious, and so teachers are more willing to say, oh, this child is overactive and he's probably got ADHD, let's put him on Ritalin, and so the school districts get more money, or they get money from the federal government if they have children who they consider handicapped, an ADHD student would fall into that category. So sometimes it's all about money, and you have to look at where that money is going to and why. And a lot of problems, a lot of typical behaviors have been medicalized, and they're put on drugs, which then become addictive, and there you have this a mess is what you
have. Well, I think this is an area that I've looked at a lot, and I appreciate what you're saying, and I would just kind of formulate it just a little bit different, probably the same in many respects, but especially in the inner cities, we have so many examples of where schools have failed their kids.
Right.
We have the dropout rates are so high. Families have been failed. There's no family nucleus. And then we have fewer job opportunities in the inner cities. And we're going to have even more now that as businesses move away from the inner cities because they don't, if they rebuild, they'll just be, hurt again. And insurance isn't going to cover a protest. And
exactly.
then you've got drug problems. You've got mental health issues. And, these same elected officials that are now blaming, these protests and that we should have bail reform to address these issues have failed at every one of those stages. And so, of course they're going to fail again because they haven't been successful at any of those. And so why do they think that now at the 11th hour bail reform of just releasing people is somehow going to change the whole thing and make it even better, when to me it just confirms every failure they've had up to that point. And so we've lost that last opportunity to straighten them out. And the last opportunity is the criminal justice system getting them involved and trying to get their attention. We're telling them, no, we're just going to let you go. That just confirms everything they've been told in their life, and that we lose that last opportunity. And that's what I think is going to cause chaos and a tragedy and a travesty if we don't fight this tooth and nail.
Oh, I agree with you. It's just so much has occurred, and so many everything has just been blown up, and I do feel very sorry for people who are in situations where there is hopelessness, and there aren't any jobs, and there's no opportunities. We would probably all react in the same way, perhaps.
But isn't the place for that on punishment? And, you know, the problem is, what we're seeing is that, you know, the first time offenders, they're fine. They're being taken care of. But the problem is, that's not who's getting arrested now. That's not who's causing these problems. It's the, you know, second, third, fourth, fifth. Someone's got a criminal history. You know, on average, we're seeing, you know, five previous arrest charges or convictions. And then you've got the extreme examples of 70 plus that killed an 80-year-old grandma. You've got, you know, the example where the guy was released just that we posted today, where he had, he was arrested for DUI and had a previous, case. He was on probation for attempted carjacking, and they just let him go. And he went on this 24-hour spree that you would just call horrendous. And the COVID-19 can't be the get out of jail free card. It cannot be that, because we're just saying, go do whatever you want. We won't care. The victims have no rights during the COVID-19. And that can't be the law.
Yeah, I just posted that link to that article. And what you're saying is true. You are just giving them a get out of, they are just giving them a get out of jail free card, and do whatever you want, because nothing's going to happen to you.
Well, and you know, in some jurisdictions, they're trying to dress it up and make it look like, well, we have this, algorithm, this risk assessment, which is going to be the panacea. It's going to be the solution for this problem. In California, they're going to have an election in November, about whether to, enact a risk assessment model for their criminal justice system, which will replace bondsmen. And then Texas, the last two legislative sessions, the Supreme Court of Texas has put forward a package that has included a risk assessment. We think the risk assessment will be included again. The problem is, the last 2 years has been just awful for risk assessments. Science has caught up. Science says they're bad. They should not be used as a part of criminal justice. The largest technology companies in the world have come out and said they're racially biased. They're good at predicting what groups will do, but they're poor at predicting what an individual will do.
Right.
And in predicting what the individual will do, they take into account what their racial group has done in the past. So it has a racial element to it. So people of certain races are going to be held to be more risky, and according to that algorithm. And so it's been attacked and told. And science has now, in the last 2 years, said they should not be used. But California is still going to propose switching to it, and they're going to have a vote statewide in November. And in Texas, it's still going to be proposed again to the legislative session as the solution to the criminal justice problem. And so even now, science is 100%. All the people that were supporting except one, all those groups now oppose it, and they're still going to propose it. We can't come to an agreement right now on what is successful and what is not successful. And that's really the whole, and a good example of the incompetence of government. Science has surpassed and has now made a conclusion on these things, and the government is not fast enough to be able to react, and is still proposing something that science says is terrible.
Right. Wow. Let me just share a comment from the chat room. And he said that the criminal drug addicts who are in rehab facilities mandated by the court, the maximum time is 30 days, which sees a revolving door, which sees a revolving door, which sees a revolving door in these rehab facilities. They all know the ropes and how to talk the talk and to say what counselors want to hear. And the policy is to treat drug addiction and mental health, PTSD with feds, et cetera, with pharmaceuticals. So it's just, it just seems to be kind of a bad situation. If you go back 50 or 60 years, the people that seemed to be committing a lot of the crimes, it wasn't that way 50 to 60 years ago. They were family people, family-oriented people, and then somehow they became ghettoized and put into situations where there began to be hopelessness and where there seemed to be no future. And I live in the suburbs of Chicago. And, for instance, Chicago has one of the toughest gun laws in the entire country. It's one of the top 10, most dangerous cities to live in. And yet you can't buy a gun or ammunition in Chicago. And yet they have more killings per weekend than just about any other city. So,
you know, 20 years ago we had this drug war. We had a war on drugs, and we were really incarcerating a lot of people. And then, you know, the cost of that got so great that we started revisiting that. And I would argue now that we've done a complete about-face, and the pendulum has swung completely in the opposite direction. And this is where I talk about accountability. I mean, we have taken away all accountability, and we've replaced it with this holistic idea that we just need to find out what it is that they need and provide services for them. And then once we do that and we finally hit on the right thing, then we'll get them on the straight and narrow. And so that removes all accountability. I mean, I'm fine with let's find out what's going on. Let's give them a chance at rehabilitation. But surely there's some point in time where we have to say, you have failed, and there's a cost for failure. And whether it's one time, two times, three times, how about 10 times? I mean, come on. We've got to have some point in time where we say we just tried and it failed. And so you now need to pay your debt to society and to make the victim whole. I mean, that's the person that gets lost in all this.
Oh, right. Yes. Or not lost, but dead or maimed for life or unable to work or terrible things. And I think too that when somebody is arrested, there should be some sort of restitution that they should receive the same kind of situation, the same condition that they have put upon their victim. Going to jail sometimes doesn't help. But if you go and you rob somebody of $200,000, then you should be forced to work and pay that back instead of going to jail for 6 months and then walk out scot-free.
Well, and what you're saying is a really good example, you know, where they keep going to drug rehab and they get out and then 30 days later, nothing's happened. It's a revolving door. I think those are all good examples of when we don't have accountability.
Exactly. Accountability is everything. Okay, we'll be right back in 3 minutes. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our first guest today is Ken W. Good, and we're talking about accountability for people who commit crimes. So if you want to pick up where you left off, it was I think people need to be accountable for what they do. Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, where we're seeing problems is the systems that we're talking about replacing, like criminal justice reform or even bail reform, we're taking out all accountability. The best example is low-level criminals that are, you know, that are career criminals. Like New York is, you know, they tried for a while and they rolled back the reforms even during the middle of the pandemic, where certain crimes that they considered to be low-level were, the courts were ordered to give no bond. And all of a sudden you got a green light from people. We had one example of a guy who's been arrested 130-something times, and he was like, hey, bail reform's great. And you see that in Texas as well. Harris County is doing something where as long as you are only accused of a certain misdemeanor, almost all misdemeanors except for seven different types, you get a PR bond for $100. You never see a judge. And so no matter how many times you're arrested, as long as it's not on that list, you don't ever see a judge and you get a $100 PR bond. Well, that's, we found very quickly that gives a green light to these people. If we just overlaid, a little bit of accountability, so that if you get a PR bond and you are accused of a new crime, or if you have a criminal history, and if you even want to say in the last 5 years or the last 3 years, or if you're on a PR bond and you are arrested, accused of a new crime, you're in those situations, you're not entitled to a PR bond. That would tremendously improve what they're trying to do. And they're not doing it. They're trying to do the opposite. Get rid of all accountability.
Exactly. And it just, it doesn't work. It doesn't work in life. It shouldn't work with the, within the criminal justice system. And certainly, it doesn't help the victim at all. And essentially it doesn't help the criminal, because he's not learning from his mistakes. You need to learn from your mistakes.
Well, and it's not sustainable. What we've seen in Harris County, even before in Houston, before the pandemic, in the last year, the numbers of pending cases before the misdemeanor courts have doubled. And so with the added cases from the pandemic, with the courts not really holding court or on a slower basis holding court, it's going to increase substantially again. And so it's not sustainable. These types of changes, you know, when we tried this on steroids across the country, when it comes time for these people to appear, they're not going to come up. They're not going to return to court on their own. And so then what are we going to do? And the problem we're seeing in some areas is they're discounting punishment. Like the worst example is in Harris County, where the DA gave somebody deferred adjudication for a violent crime, and then they did something else, which was a violation, and they didn't file a motion to adjudicate them, and then the time expired. And then they killed somebody. That person would have never been killed if the person had just had a motion to adjudicate for violation of their probation. And that's because they have so many cases, they're having to discount their punishment to get people to take it. And then they don't have the manpower to monitor it.
Right.
And it's just causing problems right and left.
It all gets down to budgeting. They don't have the manpower to handle the people they're supposed to be handling, right?
Yeah, and it's only going to get worse because of the COVID-19.
Hey, thank you so much, Cam, for being on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.